This episode of Market Talk is brought to you by Growmark FS. Keeping up on the latest in ag is a challenge, to say the least, but there are experts nearby ready to help. You'll find them at your local FS. You can trust them to bring you customized agronomic grain and energy solutions born of the latest thinking. That's because FS specialists receive continuous training that keeps them current on the latest trends, practices, and technologies. So you'll get local expertise that's both exceptional and up-to-date. Visit fssystem.com to learn how FS is bringing you what's next.
Bringing you the ag information you need. This is Market Talk, produced by the American Ag Radio Network. Now, here's your host, Jesse Allen.
Welcome into Wednesday's episode of Market Talk. Great to be here with you once again. I'm your host, Jesse Allen. Thanks for joining us, and great to have you make us part of your day here today as we saw a bit of a rebound in the grain markets, and livestock had a decent day as well here on this Wednesday as we rebounded a bit, especially in the grains from yesterday's sell-off, even despite inflation data making headlines this morning. We're going to talk about that in a second. Headline inflation data, though, was a big thing to watch, and it's still going to be an issue in our market trade moving forward. There's no doubt about it. But it appeared today's grain action found a little bit of the weather risk premium once again, and we bought a little bit of the break here on the day today. And again, appreciate you being with us. Coming up on the show, we're going to talk to Mike Zuzulo of Global Commodity Analytics, get his insight and perspective into these markets. We're going to be joined by him coming up here in segment two and three. I always enjoy my conversation with Mike and looking forward to that here on today's program. Also coming up at the end of the show, I want to make sure you listen in for an interview with Greg Tilka, as he is with Iowa State University. And we're going to talk with Greg about soybean cyst nematode, SCM. It is a yield-robbing pest that affects our soybean plants. And there is a new effort out between the SCN Coalition and Valent. And we're going to talk about the SCN root check coming up with Greg Tilka at the end of the show in segment four. So looking forward to that today as well. Well, I mentioned the inflation data out today, and I really worried that it was going to take a toll on the markets, but we were able to kind of brush that off and move to the upside. We saw the June CPI index, the consumer price index, hit a new 41-year high today at 9.1%. That was up from 8.6% the previous month and exceeding analyst expectations of 8.8%. And that is, again, just showing the continued volatility and the continued move higher with inflation here across our economy. Stocks turned lower following the release of this CPI data, which showed that new 41-year high. But stocks, for the most part, firming here as we've worked through the afternoon. As we saw the ags and energies, typically we see the algo computers immediately buy the food and fuel commodities when they see higher inflation data. Today, they sold them initially and then started to buy back. So that's something that is interesting of note. Energy demands perceived to be rebounding. Grain and oilseed traders, they're worried about adverse weather as crops go through critical growth phases in the weeks ahead. And that seemed to kind of give us the strength to move back into the upside, into the green here today in grains. I talked with Arlen Suderman of StoneX, Chief Commodities Economist, about midday. We started our conversation talking about the strength in the grain and oilseed market despite those hot inflation numbers this morning.
Yeah, Wall Street can't decide whether to own the commodity sector as a hedge against inflation or whether to sell it on fears that inflation and the Fed's response to it is going to hurt demand for commodities. For much of this year, what I've been watching is whenever inflation data, particularly the consumer price index, would come in above expectation, that we would immediately see the algos buying the food and energy commodities. I mean, within seconds, they were buying them. And that flipped this morning to where they were immediately selling them, and significant selling came in. And that seemed to be a flip in how those algo computers were programmed away from that philosophy of owning the food and energies as a hedge against inflation to worries that recession was going to slash demand for those commodities. But it didn't take long once the day session got going for the commodity section to come roaring back. That's been more true for the food-based commodities, because with food-based consumption doesn't change that much, although you'll see some tweaking and stuff with a recession, whereas energy does get hurt more. So energy continues to struggle, trading both sides of unchanged today. But the food-based commodities overall have been performing very well.
Now, with that CPI data coming in above expectations, I've seen some folks floating the idea that the Fed could come in with an even bigger rate increase than 75 basis points when they have their meeting here later this month. Do you think that could be a possibility, seeing some of this new inflation data, Arlen?
Yeah, we face a double barrel risk going forward. Inflation is a significant risk to the economy, but the Fed's response in trying to tame that inflation is expected to do harm for the economy as well. Which is worse? And I'm in the camp that believes that inflation long term is the worst, unless the Fed overreacts and does something wrong, which could create an even bigger problem. So right now the focus is on that. Stocks are under pressure. But as we look at the Fed, the expectations a month ago was that no more rate hikes above 50 basis points. Well, that changed in recent weeks toward expectations of 75 basis points based on comments made by members of the Fed. And this morning after that inflation data came out, we were trading in Fed fund futures, basically even odds, very close to even odds, between 75 basis points and 100 basis points for the next rate hike, which, of course, will be announced 2 weeks from today by the Federal Reserve.
And Arlen, in the livestock trade here briefly, seeing decent strength in hogs again today, cattle maybe getting some spillover support. Any thoughts on the livestock protein sector today?
Yeah, we seem to be getting some support from this broad-based food buying of food-based commodities this morning. As we look at the cattle market, I really don't have any real cash market really firmly established yet, but the early tones are that we may be steadied a little bit weaker than last week. And so that would be expected to be a little bit concerning. But yet, when we look at both the cattle markets and the hog markets, we are seeing some fund buying come back in here this morning. And when we look at what the effect is on the charts, both are starting to push higher above recent highs on the charts as well, bringing in a little bit of algo momentum buying to add to it. So I would put this more in line of technical trading and data trading more so than the fundamentals, although we did see USDA cut its beef production estimate, increase its export estimate for beef in yesterday's WASD report, providing some additional support there.
And again, that is comments with Arlen Suderman, Chief Commodities Economist at StoneX. Talked to him around midday, got his thoughts on our market activity here on this Wednesday. Again, for the most part, finding at least some support here, the grain and oil seeds today after yesterday's sharp sell-off. Same goes in the livestock sector as well, even with energies kind of trading both sides of unchanged, and the stock market mostly trending lower here today, at least mixed lower after the release of that inflation data. We're going to dive deeper into what's going on in the markets. Coming up next, Mike Zuzulo of Global Commodity Analytics. He will join us, provide his insight into all the dynamics we're seeing, weather, inflation, the money flows, just the general supply and demand fundamentals and more. We're going to have a great conversation. That's coming up next with Mike Zuzulo of Global Commodity Analytics. Back with more Market Talk on the way right after this.
The market news and analysis you need here on Market Talk. Now, back to Jesse Allen.
And joining us today as we take a look at the market trade here on this Wednesday, it was another interesting day. We had new inflation data out in the marketplace. We have weather risk out in the grain trade and much more to talk about. Let's say good afternoon to our good friend Mike Zuzulo with Global Commodity Analytics joining us today. Mike, great to catch up with you again, sir. How are you?
Doing great, Jesse. Thanks for having me back.
I appreciate the time. Let's dive right in, not waste any time, Mike. I think to start, the CPI index out this morning, that headline inflation number, 9.1%, the highest in 41 years. Obviously, that was something that was going to be talked about all day long, although I don't think the grain and oilseed trade was as affected by it as I thought it was going to be, but still a very hot inflation number seen here today, Mike.
Yeah, it really was. And I think that the trade, I do believe, had some surprise to it when we saw, as you say, that 9.1% being the highest since November of 1981. I can tell you in November 1981, I had a full head of hair. So that's how long ago it is that we're talking about how high this inflation is. But I do think that the surprise to the upside in the inflation and the fact that the dollar broke lower, which is an inflationary indicator in and of itself, kind of indicated to me that this was a surprise enough to kind of bring in some short covering after, you know, the essentially the WASDE bloodbath we saw in price action in grains yesterday or on the prior day's trade. So I think you're right. I don't think it was as big of a factor, but I still think it worked into the mindset, the trade sentiment of short covering with the weather, especially the European weather. And now we're starting to talk a little bit more about U.S. weather beginning to work into the row crop sentiment a little bit more. The other thing I'll throw in there, because I don't know if we'll have enough time to talk about it, the Ukrainian situation is actively moving. It is a moving target right now. The latest word is that next week there will be a deal signed to get grain out of Odessa. Odessa, as we've talked about, Jesse, is the Black Seas in the Ukraine's crown jewel for grain port shipments and storage. In fact, this week I found out that Odessa alone probably has around 18 million tons of grain in warehouses and in port terminals by itself. And so that's been the focal point in the wheat market, especially on and off throughout the last, 3 months that we've been trying to get this blockade lifted and this shipping lane open. It looks as though that's going to happen. Next week is when they're supposed to sign the deal. That really took the sheen and the luster off of the wheat. And that's, I think, why we closed lower on Wednesday's trade.
Well, let's stay on that point, Mike, and pivot there. And I know, you know, thinking about yesterday's WASDE release as well, those July numbers, it pretty much came in as expected. But you look at the numbers, you throw that with what you're talking about with Ukraine and that possible deal, which I've seen that news, as you mentioned, in the wire as well. I'll pull up the world wheat usage chart and on the video feed and talk to us a little bit about this and talk a little bit more in wheat, because this is something to definitely keep our eyes on. If we see some of that grain start to move out of Ukraine, if a deal is reached, you know, what is that going to do for price action and charts, et cetera? So walk us through a little bit more what you're thinking and what you're seeing in wheat after the July USDA numbers.
Yeah, the key with this report and the key with the market sentiment, and I think the key to help the farmer and rancher, especially those struggling with terrible pasture and range conditions or a drought that hasn't alleviated itself or a cattle lot that is going to be maybe 110 degrees next week. The key with this recent market has been the idea that we're going to have demand destruction. And USDA's report gave us that to a degree. I think it satisfied the needs of the demand bear, the recession bear, the strong dollar bear, the China COVID bear. That's all wrapped up together in the idea, Jesse, that we're not going to have the grain demand. And the export data recently has shown that. And that's, again, a big difference between the grains and the livestock and why they've separated out. And it's not as though commodity index funds are just buying agriculture indexes by themselves, and because that's both grains and livestock. They've parsed it out and they've bought the livestock and sold the grains. But this chart shows you that we were down about 1.8 million tons from June in world wheat usage. That's about the same amount that USDA took us down in world total grain usage. And so when I look at this chart and I see that they've taken us down about 6.3 million tons from last year now, I think to myself, we've taken soft red wheat down almost 45% off of its highs. I would think that's done enough damage and should encourage enough demand with that kind of a price break that wheat is still my leader. And indeed, the bright side of the WASDE report yesterday was the wheat, was that USDA increased the exports for U.S. wheat by 25 million bushels, suggesting we have seen a price break enough that we're attractive, especially given that they cut the European Union and the Ukrainian production by a total of 4 million tons. That's a big number, especially when the trade has been under the assumption that the Ukrainian grain that's been held up will be compensated for by increased European shipments. That's no longer as easy a thing to see as what they thought after the USDA WASDE numbers. So to me, especially when you integrate the Ukrainian situation with the shipping lane and the US dollar, I think the wheat still is my leader to forming a bottom first.
Well, and forming a bottom is something we definitely need to find here, Mike. And I wonder if we have found it or not. I think there's some question about that in the trade, especially just considering all the chart damage we've done in the last week or so. I think since last time we've talked, we saw the, you know, that big sell-off, the fund liquidation, et cetera. And now a little bit of a bounce back, minus yesterday, of course. But I wonder with, you know, wheat, corn, beans, have we found that bottom yet? I think it remains to be seen. I'd love your thoughts on that.
Yeah, this is where it's going to be really tough navigating. But, you know, we talked about this, and I think we've got a graphic of the CPI and a Bloomberg article headline that came out on Wednesday afternoon that they're now in the trade because of this 9.1% CPI data number. Jesse, they're now talking about the Fed going to a 1 full percentage point increase this month. Well, this month means late in July. It's not like the Fed meeting is the same week as the WASDE report like it normally is. We have to wait until the very end of July, essentially, to get their comments and their actual policy. The trade had baked in, as we got the WASDE report, probably 0.75 point hike with the idea that the Fed would back off really aggressively and say, okay, we've done all we're going to do for a while. We're going to sit back and watch. Why would they do that? Well, the data and the economic points that they key suggest they should. Plus, they realize that it takes 3 to 6 months for their policies to actually get into the real economy. So if you're looking for a 1.5% increase in interest rates over the course of 60 days, you're going to need to wait until September, October to see exactly what that's done to the real economy. But this Bloomberg headline, and I've seen it in the Financial Times now as well, is suggesting, well, the inflation's so red hot that the Fed's going to, you know, supercharge this rate hike this month, and they may come back again and do something in August or September. That's my fear. And so I've really talked to clients sincerely about the idea that copper led us lower, led the wheat lower especially, the dollar led us lower. So unless I would see a dollar high and a copper low, and that would come together with a wheat low in terms of price low, I'm going to wait. I'm going to wait until we see what the Federal Reserve actually does and says about future policy and then see if that doesn't bring a low in. So I'm going to say another 5 to 7% down is possible. I don't think we should take out our July lows given the WASDE report. But by the same token, I want to see what the Federal Reserve says. So I'm going to say 5% lower, then maybe I'll start looking at longs. Otherwise, I'm going to wait for the Federal Reserve towards the end of the month to start to kind of signal the all clear. Obviously, I'll have one eye watching the weather.
And again, that is Mike Zuzulo with Global Commodity Analytics, our guest analyst here today on Market Talk. We're going to have more with Mike coming up. We have a lot more to discuss with our conversation. We're going to be talking the China economy, China demand for soybeans, and much more coming up here on Market Talk. Closing numbers today, September quart up six at $6 even, December up 8.75, $5.95 1/4, August soybeans up 16.5, $14.84 3/4, November beans up 6.5, $13.49 1/2, August bean meal up 12.40 a ton, $4.37.20, August bean oil down 111 points at 59 even. Chicago wheat, September down 3.5, 8.10 3/4, December down 2.5, 8.27 3/4, September Kansas City wheat down 5.5, 8.62 1/4, December Kansas City wheat down 5.5 at 8.70 1/4. Spring wheat September 5 lower 9.13 3/4. December down 4 9.27 1/4. September oats 1 1/4 lower 4.62. Canola was down 4.50 at 8.29.90 here today. Cotton as well. Looking at the cotton market, that had a rough day yesterday. Today down 303 points, 95.41 for October. Live cattle for August up 20, 136.87. October unchanged, 141.27. Feeder cattle for August up 122, 180.80. September up 155, 183.07. July hogs up 90, 114.50. And August up 150 at 110.50. Back with more from Mike Zuzulo of Global Commodity Analytics on the way after this. Back with more Market Talk right after the break.
It's been our legacy year after year, and we're proud of our heritage. At FS, our focus has been on improving growers' profitability by developing leading products and services to advance operations. Year after year, we've been committed to pointing the way forward. So visit fssystem.com and let's get you headed towards your next success. FS, bringing you what's next.
Market information that matters to you on Market Talk. Now, back to Jesse Allen.
And welcome back to Market Talk. I'm your host, Jesse Allen, with you here on this Wednesday afternoon. Mike Zuzulo of Global Commodity Analytics, our guest analyst today, as we continue our conversation with Mike. And we've been talking a lot about how the dollar and the macro influences are all weighing on the market trade. The CPI data we saw this morning, 9.1%. As well with this dollar, it's been spiking. I believe it was yesterday, the dollar and the euro came together for the first time in 20 years. There's just a lot of interesting dynamics going on right now in the outside markets that are having an effect on commodities, Mike.
Yeah, and this is where the soybeans come into play. And you and I have talked about this a lot, is because soybeans equal China, copper equals China. The problem with China right now is we think that it's a pretty rough economy right now, so rough that they're willing to throw $220 billion at stimulus through tax breaks and also through bonds for infrastructure. That's a huge number for China. $220 billion U.S. dollars is huge. And so when you talk about the stronger dollar and the parity between the euro and the U.S. dollar and the weakening of the Brazilian currency and the weakening of the Chinese yuan, that all goes right back to the COVID policies of China, and it all goes back to the Federal Reserve policy of tightening and fighting our inflation battle here. But I think China's economy is actually worsening at this point, not getting better or stabilizing. And I say that because Bloomberg also reported this week that about 22 cities are seeing owners of mortgages not pay their mortgages anymore, totaling, I think it was about $86 or $83 billion in mortgage payments. They've stopped paying their mortgages because real estate values are plummeting and project delays are being seen around the country. And this is coming from the big banks like the Citis and the JP Morgans. They're seeing a real problem with the real estate sector. And it shouldn't surprise us because of what happened with Evergrande and some of these other companies about 3 or 4 months ago. Well, now finally that ripple effect is coming into the real market and to the real Chinese consumer. And I think we're really on a precipice of seeing a real possible severe economic slowdown in China if we're not too careful here. And I don't think we've really caught up with that. And I think USDA's data yesterday of pulling down the Chinese imports of soybeans from 99 million to 98 million metric tons was a big wake-up call to the trade.
I would agree, and that is exactly where I was going to go next, Mike, with our conversation, is talking about those USDA numbers on the soybean side in China yesterday. And, you know, we've heard more and more reports about the Chinese selling out of their reserves and not buying U.S. soybeans or buying beans on the world market right now, maybe waiting for prices to come down a little bit. But, you know, we talk about this Chinese demand, and to all of your points, you know, if their economy is in trouble, what is that going to do moving forward? And I thought this was very interesting to see on the USDA report yesterday.
Yeah, and you see in that commentary below that chart that the imports and consumption of oil seeds and veg oils have fallen short of expectations. And see, this is where we have this premium in the market in the soybeans, I think, Jesse. One premium from the trade that thought we were only going to have a Brazilian bean crop of 115 or 120 million metric tons. Well, it's clearly going to be 124 to 126, in my opinion. So there you have, you know, 7 or 8 million metric tons on the supply side that you haven't priced in yet. And now you go back to China. What if they do drop from 99 million tons to 94 million tons? That's only a 5% drop. And that's not a big drop when you look at it over the course of the last four actual years of marketing year imports. And so 94 million metric tons would be 5 million tons on top of that. all of a sudden, with 100 million metric ton ending stocks number here in the world right now, as of USDA's report, 99 plus, you add another 10 million onto that, and all of a sudden you're talking about almost 110 million metric tons. And so the COVID restrictions cannot be overemphasized as far as what they're doing to the Chinese economy right now. And I think I'm actually worried at this point that 2018 levels of imports are not off the table. In other words, I could see where we end up not doing much better than 85, 86 million metric tons of imports because their hog industry is smaller than what they want it to be net-net. And because of what's going on with this demand, this consumption base, if it's eroding. Remember, the real estate market in China is kind of like our consumption in the economy of the United States. It makes up around two-thirds of the economy for the domestic economy in China. So it's almost everything when it comes to not having a slowdown. And if they have a rough real estate market, they'll pull money out of their banks, they'll stop buying real estate. And all of a sudden, you'll see that the Asian equities even get sicker than they've already been. And that's what we have to really plan for in our marketing plans. And I think soybeans are on the front line with that.
Corn market real quick as well, Mike. I've heard some rumors, speaking of China, about them maybe buying some cargoes here soon. Who knows what that will look like if it does materialize. But you see corn right now hanging around the $6 mark, a new crop. Any thoughts with just how this corn market's been looking and performing here since we started the week, got through the July WASDE report, et cetera?
Yeah, I think corn and wheat still have less competition out there than the soybeans when it's all said and done. And I think also, Jesse, when I saw the USDA give us a 665 average cash price, we went down to about 565 in December futures for a low. You take 30 cents of basis off that, you're talking about 535. All of a sudden, you're a dollar plus, a dollar 30 underneath the average cash price as of the recent lows. And so I think the corn, because of the wheat, has gone into an undervalue mindset. And I'm actually looking at feed needs getting covered here in the not too distant future, depending on how this high pressure sets up in the Western Corn Belt or doesn't set up, and whether this Ukrainian deal goes through or not. So I'm really on edge to get some feed needs locked in for producers on new crop corn, for cattle ranchers on new crop corn, because I do still think it's the most undervalued. And I had several conversations with clients this week on their corn. It's a short crop. Our silking is way behind. Obviously, blooming for soybeans is behind as well. But I'd say we're 2 to 3 weeks behind still what we normally are. And so a ridge of high pressure can do a lot of damage. I think the biggest thing to watch for corn in the very short term related to the supply, related to the weather, is watch the Iowa crop conditions. The fact they went up 4 points to 81% good to excellent this week, I think really took the sheen off of the possibility for corn to find extra support and some extra short covering. I think the trade historically really cares mostly about an Iowa drought, not necessarily a Kansas drought or even an Illinois drought. They really care about Iowa and Minnesota. And that's where this weather is really key for the positioning of how we look at this corn in the next 30 days.
Mike, I want to segue our conversation to livestock, but I'm also going to pull up on the video screen the average prices you mentioned for corn, the July numbers coming out, and it's got the cattle and hog numbers there as well. If you want to make mention of these real quick as we segue to livestock, because great points as far as maybe locking in some of those feed needs here with the way corn is looking right now. But talk about this a little bit as we segue to livestock, Mike.
Yeah, the big point here is that if you look at all those numbers, look at the futures prices, especially for new crop corn and new crop beans. We're already well below those average prices. And so this works into my narrative and my analysis that I've been sharing with you for several months now, that I'd rather be in the futures market hedging than in the cash market hedging, because there's no premium in the cash market at this point. And I think that's where the cash market has more ability to withstand knocks, whereas the investors can really play havoc in the futures market. And so that's happened. You know, we talked about this probably 3 months ago. That's what's been happening. So stick with that program. When we get ready to hedge, do more bought puts, do more paper positions, as opposed to cash related positions, unless you have just a terrific new crop basis.
Livestock today, cattle and hogs, especially feeder cattle, again, breaking the upside some more today. Hogs looking strong. Fat cattle just kind of felt like they went along. What are your thoughts with the futures trade in the protein sector today, Mike?
Yeah, the USDA was very good and giving to the livestock sector. It fed the idea that the funds have been working with, that we've not lost any demand. In fact, USDA increased beef exports and they kept the beef imports the same. And so we really don't have any demand destruction in the USDA WASD numbers when it comes to the livestock, and we continue to be threatened with supply issues. I think the hog market especially has been able to find a lot of support off the African swine fever in Europe. That sounds like it's spreading out into different countries, very big, important countries like Germany, a huge hog producer for Europe. So I think the lower supply, strong demand, even with the 20-year high in the dollar, has really kept the funds involved on the long side in the markets. Now, at this stage, Jesse, I think we've got to start thinking about premium and basis. We've got the feeder cattle futures $9 over the CME cash index. So we got a big premium in the feeder contracts, whereas it's the exact opposite in the fat cattle. If you use a Nebraska fat cattle price of 145 in the cash market, and you've got the futures market at 137, 138, you've got a substantial discount in the futures market as we head into what I think is a weather bull drought in the Southern Plains. One of the things that is really concerning me are these temperatures that are going to be, maybe we're going to be seeing in feedlot country in the next 10 days.
Mike, before we run out of time here, any other final thoughts you have for us today?
Just pick up a trial. I think it's a really good time. I say this frequently, but I really do think this is a very good time to take a look at going to globalcomresearch.com and picking up a 2-week trial and seeing if some of this macro micro mindset can't help you in your marketing plan. I really try and bridge that macro and micro commodity analysis so it makes more sense, hopefully, when you make your decisions in your ag side.
Globalcomresearch.com. Com has two M's in it, globalcomresearch.com. With that, Mike Zuzulo, always a pleasure, sir. Have a fantastic week. We'll talk to you next week.
You too, Jesse. Thanks so much.
Mike Zuzulo of Global Commodity Analytics joining us here on Market Talk. Up next, a conversation about soybean cyst nematode with Greg Tilka from Iowa State University. Back with more Market Talk right after this.
Keeping you informed with the latest market information for your operation. This is Market Talk. Now, back to Jesse Allen.
And joining us now on the program, pleased to have with us Iowa State University nematologist Greg Tilka is with us. Greg, it's great to catch up with you, sir. How are you?
I'm doing well, Jesse. Thanks for talking with me today. It's been a while since we've talked.
It has been a while since you and I've got a chance to talk, but I appreciate the time. We have a very important topic to discuss here today, and that is SCN, soybean cyst nematode. This is something, Greg, that it is a pest that is extremely tough for growers. It robs a lot of yield. This is something that growers really, if they have to deal with it, it could be an issue, can it?
Yeah, it's a real frightening combination of factors that make it so dangerous. And one of those factors is that fields that have it and are losing lots of yield don't look sick. So I can't think of any other ailment in crops where it's considerable yield loss and the crop looks perfectly fine. So that's a huge obstacle to overcome.
Very huge obstacle to overcome. And we think about now we're getting into the heart of the growing season across the country, across the Corn Belt. And this is something that farmers are really going to have to watch out for. And that's part of what the SCN Coalition has come up with. They've teamed up with Valent to, you know, try and shed some light on SCN in our field. So talk about that a little bit here just first before we talk maybe some more tips.
The essence is that farmers need to become actively engaged in managing SCN. That's a kind of a phrase that the SCN Coalition promotes, active management. And you can't manage something that you don't have, or you don't know you have, rather. And so many farmers don't know that they have SCN, and that's where active management starts. And so we want farmers to get out in fields and look, you can actually see it on roots during the growing season. And that's what the Valent program is all about. It's promoting the idea that you could have it and not know about it. You can easily get out in the field, dig roots with a spade. You don't want to pull the roots. You want to dig the roots and then shake the soil from the roots. And anytime from now to about early September, certainly late August, you'll be able to see them, little white females. They're much smaller than nitrogen nodules that are normally seen on roots. They're about the size of a period at the end of a printed sentence, and they're white in color. So we really encourage farmers to get out and dig roots and look for the females. I should say we're encouraging agronomists as well, because there are many, many agronomists out there scouting fields for insects and weeds and foliar diseases. There's nothing that causes more yield loss than soybean cyst nematode. And so I want everybody in a field carrying a spade and digging roots every 50 or 30 paces that they take and just looking at those soybean roots and seeing what they might find.
I want to put this in perspective, put this number out there for folks listening. $1.5 billion in losses annually from SCN. That is a big number, Greg.
Yeah, it's staggering. Yeah. And Jesse, that number has stayed the same for about 20 years. And that number is put together annually by extension plant pathologists. And it pales in comparison to anything else. And I used to think, well, those numbers are estimates of dollar losses. Certainly ranking-wise, SCN always tops the list. But recently, in the year 2000, some scientists at Penn State University published a paper based on actual data. And they estimated, through data analysis, not just people's opinions, the yield loss from SCN over the last 10 years, and it was $1.5 million. So those estimates that we've been receiving for decades has been spot on. It's been shown with actual experimental data.
Greg, if a farmer is out checking their field, if they find SCN, what can they do? What should they do if they find some of these females attached to their roots?
Well, the first thing is to understand it's not a death sentence. I know humans and with human health, sometimes they don't want to go to a doctor because they are afraid of what they're going to be told. There's no reason to be afraid to discover that you have soybean cyst nematode. That's the first step towards managing it. So it's a multi-prong approach. After they discover that SCN is present in the field, the first step after digging roots and looking for females and seeing them would be to get a good soil sample taken from the fall so you can get a handle on the numbers. And that requires taking multiple soil cores from every 20 acres and mixing those cores up real well, put them in a bag and send them to a qualified laboratory. All that information on how to do that is on the SCN Coalition website, which is thescncoalition.com. After they get their numbers, then it's a matter of thinking about your cropping sequence moving forward. Almost all soybean varieties that any farmer can buy have PI88788 resistance. That's the common type of SCN resistance. And it's in the upper Midwest, the main soybean belt, it's in 95% of the varieties. So most farmers are going to have to grow that source of resistance. But there's 5% of the varieties that have unique, hard to come by, but more effective resistance called Peking. And the active part of management for farmers and agronomists is seek out those varieties with Peking SCN resistance and start rotating them in with PI88788 varieties. Don't switch completely to Peking or we'll go down the same path that we're at right now with the common type of resistance, but look for and rotate Peking resistance with 88788 resistance and always rotate with non-host crops as well. This year with high fertilizer prices, I know in Iowa, I heard lots of chatter about beans on beans, and that's terrible from an SCN perspective. That's like Armageddon. And so you want to rotate with non-host crops, rotate sources of resistance in soybeans, and then there's lots of seed treatments being offered, and farmers should really experiment with those and see which ones provide them a yield bump.
Well, fantastic stuff. And the website, you can learn more about the SCN Coalition, their partnership with Valent and more, thescncoalition.com. With that, Greg Tilka with Iowa State University. Appreciate the time. Thanks for joining us today.
All right. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
And that's Greg Tilka with Iowa State University. That's going to do it for today's Market Talk. Coming up tomorrow, we'll be broadcasting live from the Corteva AgriScience Media Day in Johnston, Iowa. I'm your host, Jesse Allen. Have a fantastic Wednesday. Talk to you tomorrow.
It's been our legacy year after year, and we're proud of our heritage. At FS, our focus has been on improving growers' profitability by developing leading products and services to advance operations. Year after year, we've been committed to pointing the way forward. So visit fssystem.com and let's get you headed towards your next success. FS, bringing you what's next.